The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 19th of December, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Tony Mannini, Executive Chairman of Asia Met Resources, ARS, his ticker there, and Tony discusses progress at their copper gold projects in Indonesia. Also on the podcast, Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Vesarion, VRS, and Neil explains the memorandum of understanding they've entered into with a state-owned Chinese aerospace company. Also on the podcast, Gretchen Lambert, Chief Executive Officer of Red Emperor Resources, RMP is ticker there, and Gretchen talks about the progress achieved this week in regards to their Winx 1 exploration well in Alaska. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10s versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Mannini, Executive Chairman of Asia Met Resources. Tony, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. Great being on, and thanks for having me so close to Christmas.
Yeah, and nice to see you're still working hard. I mean, you've released an update on the bankable feasibility study on your BKM project, and we'll get into that in a bit. As always, Tony, I hate assuming everyone knows all about Asia Met, even though you are one of the most popular, most followed companies on Vox Markets. But just for the people who are not familiar, can you just summarise what you're all about, please?
Yeah, very quickly. So Asia Met is a copper-gold focused company. Its primary assets are all in Indonesia. We have two projects. We have one project in Kalimantan, which is in the final stage of feasibility study called BKM. It's a copper project looking to get that into production over the next couple of years at 25,000 tonnes per annum of copper cathode. That particular development opportunity surrounded by very broad acreage of high prospectivity ground, and we've got a number of targets on there, several of which have already been drilled, some which, like BK, have resources, polymetallic resources defined. So huge upside there off the back of a development project at 25,000 tonnes in Kalimantan. And the second project is really a large long-term growth pipeline opportunity. It's a project called Bhutan. It's on the northern end of Sumatra Island in the province of Aceh. It's a very large deposit. It's over 5 billion pounds of contained copper. Very good grade comes through to the surface. It's been extensively drilled. All of those resources are JORC compliant. It's at a stage where it's ready to expand and take through on the development path well. So very large portfolio copper assets. One near to development and a huge pipeline of growth potential sitting behind it, all sort of paired together with in a company that's run by a group of people that are very experienced in taking projects from exploration through development and into operations. Very experienced board, very experienced management team, have been doing this a long time. So despite the ups and downs that we get in markets, we're very focused on long-term value creation for shareholders, and that's what we continue to do at AMET. And we've been doing that since we put the asset together in 2014, over the last 4 years, and we're working very hard to continue to deliver that value over the next few years, Justin.
Yeah, well, listen, I want to talk to you about general sentiment and more macroeconomics as well before we get into this, or fundamentals. But first of all, tell us where you are with the most advanced project, BKM project here. Where are you at the moment? I know you're in the middle of a BFS, but specifically, what are you up to at the moment there?
Yeah, so Justin, we announced back around, I think it's about 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, A delay in the feasibility study, a slight delay in the feasibility study of 4 to 6 months. We needed to do some additional geotechnical work, some additional drilling to convert some inferred resource material into the main indicated categories, get more mine life. What that will inevitably do is really, in an overall sense, make the project fundamentally more robust. And I guess, you know, particularly in a backdrop like we currently have, where sentiment is poor, you need to have projects as robust as you possibly can. You know, I would just, one of the key things that really, you know, people need to sort of consider when they've got these types of investments, and I'll just come back to what we're doing in a second, but is really the best time to be actually developing projects is when sentiment is poor, because you want to bring your production on when sentiment's good and the market's strong. And there's a whole lot of things flow into that. So obviously, you know, the price of labour, the input, the materials input, the availability of consultants, the availability of contractors, rates, consumables, everything is actually easier to get hold of when things aren't as buoyant as they sometimes are. So, you know, our industry has a tendency to build projects right at the top of the market when all the capital's available and everybody's buoyant. It really should be building projects when the sentiment's weak. And, you know, we're in a period now where, you know, sentiment has been better. It's come off a bit. And, you know, I've sort of stuck my knitting in that over the last 4 years, and I stick to my knitting with that telly knit, and now's a good time to be building projects. So we've had a bit of delay, but in the overall scheme of things, you know, 4 to 6 months in a life cycle of resource companies is really not material, to be honest. What is more material is we get these things right. So concentrating on getting the geotech right, we're concentrating on converting additional material into reserve and really putting all that together to optimise the mine plan, crunch the numbers in terms of CapEx and OpEx, get this project as robust as we possibly can so that we, when we do put the button on project financing, we get the best outcome we can in terms of debt equity mix and the ability to, you know, to get to optimize the returns to shareholders. I mean, that's what we're here for. We think and act, in the medium to long term. We don't get too upset by short term market ramifications.
Yeah. And what do you think is happening at the moment? I mean, I'm quite bearish on resource stocks. I mean, I think my personal opinion is it's going to be a tough 2019, and I've sort of withdrawn from resource, and I'm not, I think it'll have an upturn. I think obviously the copper story is strong longer term, but what's your thoughts on, say, 2019?
Oh, look, I think there's very strong disconnect at the moment between the fundamentals, Justin, and reality. You know, it's been, the market is very much perception driven at the moment, but if you look behind that, you know, I mean, you just got to test yourself. You know, the coal price, the coking coal price is over $200 a ton. You know, and historically it's been down low, it's been down $70, $80 a ton. So copper prices are strong, iron ore prices are strong, copper prices, yeah, look, they're relatively weak than they were a little while ago at 330, but they're still at 280. Not a bad price. Anyone with a decent copper mine is making plenty of money. The gold miners are making plenty of money. So there's a lot of money being made in resources, anybody that's got a decent operation at the moment. So, you know, strong cash flows, strong earnings. A lot of that money's been, you know, given back to shareholders by way of buybacks and dividend and everything else. And we have this disconnect between, you know, as the fundamentally strong businesses and the way the market's viewing them. And it's quite unusual to see that disconnect, and it's very much sentiment driven. If we just, you know, and if we did dig into our favourite subject, copper, because that's, you know, what we live and die by here at AsiaMet, you know, you just sort of get behind it in terms of the fundamentals. I just, you know, quickly got a few sort of notes here just in front of me just to talk to you about today. But as of December 11th, there was 121,000 tonnes of copper in LME stocks. It's the lowest copper in stocks in May 2008 when the copper price was $3.75 a pound. That's, you know, so there's less than 2 days' supply. So as I was saying to early on, the market is fundamentally in balance. And, you know, if we look forward, you know, the simple arithmetic that, you know, I have run and spoken to you about many times, you know, over the last 40 years, the copper price has averaged 2.5% year-on-year growth over 40 years. So why would that stop today? Why would that stop in the next 6 months? Why would that stop next 12 months? We've got half the world's population industrialising, urbanising. We've got, green EV, an EV revolution upon us, which everybody's, you know, buying into, and it needs bucket loads of copper. I just see a total disconnect here between the fundamentals and the reality. And, you know, the market today, you know, compared to where it was 40 years ago, is about three times larger. So, you know, I just quickly had a look at the 5-year, 10-year, 30-year charts on copper, and the copper price is, you know, still in a strong long-term uptrend. So I see this as a relatively short aberration. Those fundamentals sit there, and then I look at the share prices of companies. So put ours to one side for a minute. You take First Quantum Minerals, one of the big pure play copper producer, down 50% from the middle of the year, greater than 50%. Even our own Camel on the AIM, one of the, you know, great company on the AIM's down 40%. Freeport, one of the largest copper producers, down 50. Hud Bay down 50. And then smaller end down, you know, where we play, you know, development stories like Kana in Canada down 75%. You know, these things are sort of all, so there's a disconnect in my view. Copper's from 330 to 280, 50 cents on 50 cents on $3.30, so whatever that is, 23% or something. But yet, you know, we've got good companies, producers down more than 50%, and the, you know, smaller end of developers like ourselves, you know, off 75%. So I just sort of total disconnect here, and I don't think it's any surprise we've got the short-term people have departed. We've got the long-term people actually chasing assets. So, you know, we've seen Zijin doing deals, you know, in Congo, in Serbia, buying Boar, buying, you know, copper. We've seen all the majors, all the majors, every single presentation they give how bullish they are on copper. They're all exploring like hell for new copper resources. You've seen, you know, people rushing into SolGold, Oz Minerals buying up at, you know, smaller assets in Brazil. And so, you know, the long-term copper players, the short-term speculative players have departed. You can see that in the share prices of the copper equities, right? And we have been devoid of that. So, you know, I see, you know, a disconnect here at the moment, Jonathan, and I think that as we go into 2019, we're going to see that, you know, correct. So, you know, I'm not, I'm actually pretty bullish about, you know, okay, is it going to be one? Is it going to be three? Is it going to be six? But I see that something's got to give here. And the fundamentals to me that the price has got to give.
Yeah. And how does this kind of sentiment, you say it's a sentiment thing, it's sentiment driven. And of course, I mean, the markets are, you know, there's one whiff of fear and it can spread like wildfire. You mentioned the RNS there, you're on a corporate level, you're chatting with a number of potential strategic partners or investors in Jakarta. Yep. Does that affect those kind of talks, or are those still sort of very good and ongoing?
Oh, look, Justin, I think, you know, some people would sort of perhaps would be a bit critical. Oh, well, you know, why are you doing, you know, why are you initiating this now? as you know, we've been talking for a number of years now. We've been on a long-term, sort of very clear long-term strategy where we had a number of things to put together, and we've been putting them together. Now, you know, if you think about it, it was going to be very difficult to have any discussions with anybody on Bhutan until we had the IUP production. We got the IUP production in place this year. It was going to be very difficult to have discussions with anybody on Bhutan when we had 50%, you know, and we moved to 80% this year. So, you know, we've had to get those couple of things in place. We then went and did a few drill holes to try and raise the profile of the asset, and it was a logical time to start talking to people. And likewise, you know, with what we've been doing at BKM, you know, a great, really, really solid project. And, you know, we've been pushing it through to the point where, you know, we're trying to get asset from where it's valued, where these things are valued at $0.04 a pound as an exploration play to 10 cents a pound as a feasibility play. So in a strategic sense, that all is very logical and is exactly what we, you know, what we should have been doing. It's what we've been working to. Now, we've got to that point, and, you know, we've got a, you know, poor market sentiment and a bit of downturn. So, you know, we've had to raise a capital. Obviously, we've kept that to a bare minimum. We've made sure that, you know, that money that we brought in pretty much came from, you know, the pockets of existing holders, given the context of there's a lot of people who have put money in at a higher level. So we want to look after our existing holders as a priority. So we try to keep it fairly tight and small to give ourselves enough runway to get through to the next sort of decision point, which is a delivery feasibility. So it was always, we've sort of had sort of ongoing dialogue with various people. It always made sense that now, 3-4 months out from delivery of the feasibility and having those things in place for Bhutan, that we're up the ante in terms of those discussions. We're doing that. We've got, you know, as we've alluded to in the release, we've got a number of parties in the data room. Look, they all take different shapes and sizes, Justin. It's fair to say it's, there's a mix of they're predominantly Asian groups, and, you know, some from Indonesia and some from outside Indonesia, and their interests are, you know, they differ. Some are interested in partnering, and they require operating teams like ourselves to continue to operate and partner as a financial partner with us. And whether that's at the project along one asset or both assets, some have preference for one, some have preference for both, and others have preference to, you know, take a bigger position. So, look, all of those, you know, our job as management and board is to, you know, continue to develop the company, get as many options as we can on the table, ensure that those options, whichever option we go with, is in the best interest of shareholders longer term. And, you know, we'll be working through all that over the next, you know, 3 or 4 months. So, you know, look, I think it's fair to say that, you know, like I said earlier on, the short-termers have departed and the long-termers have upped their level of interest and activity. And I don't think there's any surprise, given the poor market sentiment and what's happened with our share price, et cetera, that the level of interest is actually higher now than it has been. You know, even though we've had good interest, it's actually higher now than it has been probably for the last six months or so. So no surprise, the long term is stepping up.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very much a case of, you know, you're getting on with the project. I mean, and largely, I suppose, you sort of have to ignore. I mean, it must bother you, the share price, because you're improving the value, the increasing value of the share price is going down. But it must be quite hard to just ignore that, is it?
Oh, very much so, Justin. I mean, you know, you at the end of the day, we're a public company and we're measured by, you know, we're measured by our share price. But, you know, I think we've got to be realistic about it. you know, I've sort of alluded to the just the broader market sentiment, the way that, you know, not just, you know, I mean, even the producers are off 50%. So that's a reality. We can only control what we can control. We're getting on with doing the job, delivering the value. We have changed our strategy. It does annoy me. Of course it annoys me, but we just have to adapt to where we are at any given time. It's not new to me talking to you today that we're in a cyclic business. I've been in it for 35 years. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be able to move. And, you know, I think in terms of where Regiment's at now, look, it just changes the way that we approach, you know, what we do in respect of the project financing and partnering. And, you know, we might look at, you know, there's a whole range of different options that we look at to fund ourselves, to minimise some, you know, the dilution or potential dilution for shareholders at the corporate level, and that's really to concentrate on moving our emphasis to the project level, and that's what we're doing. And, you know, all the discussions that we'll be having are really around project level. You know, there may be some discussion around corporate level, but really our focus is predominantly to bring it back to the project level, because at the project level is where the true fundamental value is actually measurable and recognisable. All those metrics I ran through, you know, 4 cents a pound, 10 cents a pound, you know, JORC resources, money spent, they're real numbers. And they're the basis for discussion, not the share price. And so what we control is to take the discussion away from the share price and concentrate on the project, and that's what we're...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Tony, one final thing. In summary, three bullet points, if you could, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of it, but and not yet following the story, but I see a chance to jump in here. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, so Justin, you know, and I'm always consistent on this. It's projects, people, and timing. I think the projects really have changed. The fundamentals are actually better today than they have been. We've actually got 80% of Bhutan now. We had 40% before with IUP production. We had with the BKM projects, you know, it's coming along nicely. We've got a lot of upside. So fundamentally, the projects are very sound. You know, lots of upside. And you've got a team of people who've done all this before. Delivered projects from where they are today in production, built companies, multi-billion dollar companies. So, you know how to, got the assets, people who know how to do it. And importantly, I think, you know, all the things we've been discussing about really today are about, you know, where we are, our fundamentals versus perception, market sentiment, and where we are in the cycle in terms of, you know, the share price. So what better entry point than to come in now where, you know, we're down, I don't actually know the number, but it's, you know, 70-odd percent down, a number of the companies I've mentioned today. So the entry point, I think, is a fantastic time to come in. We've got a lot of news to come through, a lot of fundamental value delivery news over the next few months. So great time for people to get in, as I alluded to, not just in terms of the cyclicity of the sentiment and share price, but say the fundamentals around, you know, the copper, the outlook for copper is fundamentally, in my view, extremely strong. It's not only me saying it. There's 10 investment banks and, you know, major companies and everybody are looking. We didn't even talk about the supply side today, but, you know, there's been some recent research, Justin, you know, the headline, the cupboard is bare. I can assure you that being a supply side guy, the cupboard does look pretty bare. So there's really not a lot of new supply come on. The market's tight, but the sentiment poor, and that will correct itself coming into the new year. So I think timing is perfect for people to get set in AsiaMet. There's very few copper development stories around with strong growth, and there's very few copper development stories around with strong growth here. The people have actually done it multiple times before and are focused on doing it again. So no better time than today.
Excellent stuff, Tony. Good to chat to you, and you know, have a nice Christmas, happy New Year, and hopefully we'll catch up in the new year. Thank you very much.
Good on you, Justin. Thanks. Appreciate your time, and thanks for your support throughout the year. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Varsarian. That's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for coming back on.
Oh, good morning, Justin. Busy old week for us, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be the last time I spoke to you until the new year. But you're back on with a collaboration with a Chinese aerospace company. As always, Neil, I mean, you are still being highly followed in pretty much every day, every week on Vox. So there are new people coming to the story. But give us a quick summary. Varsarian, what you're all about, it's not all about graphene, is it?
No. So we started the business in 2011, and we progressed quickly up to listing in 2013. We're a materials company, so that's all we do. We deal with materials. We take IP from UK universities, and then we turn it into products that consumers use and industrialists use on a day-to-day basis. So that's what we do.
Yeah, well, I say it's not all about graphene. The excitement is, I think. I mean, because, you know, we've seen that we don't know the limits yet. There's no known limits of what graphene can do. We're still very early stage commercially, of course, but you've been signing lots of JVs and collaborations and agreements, MOUs, and this is a further one. So you've done a collaboration with a Chinese aerospace company. Take us into the detail of this, Neil.
Yeah, so, you know, this is all about foundation work. So what we've been very careful to do this year, and it's been a phenomenal year for us, we're dealing with some of the largest companies in the world. This particular company has, you know, has 150,000 employees, roughly. I mean, these are patients. Hello?
Hello? Yeah.
This business has about 150,000 employees, and you know, it is one of the largest companies in China. It's state-owned, so we're effectively dealing with the Chinese government, and we're dealing in an area which is all about aerospace, it's all about space exploration, and China's been quite vocal about its, you know, its desire to be one of the leaders in that particular area.
Yeah, and has this come about because, you know, of, you know, your dealings with other Chinese sectors or other Chinese companies, or is it just a new contact?
It's a new contact. It's come through our connections with UK government. Obviously, we've got our two secondees, and they're liaising with their Chinese counterparts. This is a big area of exploration for the Chinese government, and it's one of their, you know, strategic aims. And so we've been able to do this deal, the start of this deal, which is a memorandum of understanding around using not only graphene, but some of our other products in applications as diverse as heat treatment or heat management and a range of lightweight in structures. So, you know, it's multiple applications, so not only aerospace but space. It's multiple projects within those fields, and it's multiple products for us. So it's very key for us in our development.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this is, like I say, an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, and I've seen, you know, you've done quite a few collaborations, you know, quite with impressive companies over the last year, and some of your sort of detractors on social media have said, well, it's just another collaboration, it doesn't mean anything. What would you say to those people?
Yeah, well, we're trying to build a business, not an exit strategy. So for us, it's all about showing progress. It's all about laying down these foundations from which we can build on. So it's just a process we're going through. Now, we keep our shareholders informed as to what we're doing. You know, some people, you know, have got to understand that it is just a process we're going through. So we have an inquiry, we have an NDA, we have a collaboration agreement, then we have testing, then we have some iteration around the testing, and then we move more towards orders, which is what we were able to demonstrate with one of the largest construction companies in the world a couple of weeks ago. So for us, it's just a natural process. It's part of the business evolution. And, you know, we're delighted as a company to be able to be considered. You have to understand the rate of progress that this company's gone through, and it's very easy to lose track. You know, just over a year ago, the share price was about 20 pence. We were just starting our graphene journey. Since then, we've been able to bring on board the largest aircraft, or one of the largest aircraft suppliers. We've been able to bring in a large textile company. We've been able to bring in a large construction company. We've been in, people asked us, you know, what was happening in China. We've been able to demonstrate four or five deals in China. So for us, we've seen huge amounts of progress, not only in the share price, but also in the evolution of the business. And that's what it's all about for me. It's all about showing this progress.
Yeah, and so it's a bit like a funnel, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's no guarantee there's some of these collaborations will come to anything commercially, but obviously the more you do, the more are likely to come to fruition. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's it. So we maintain a full hopper, everything from inquiry to collaboration. We're negotiating all the time. We make sure that we have the right resources, we have the right partners, you know, people like the Graphene Engineering Innovation Centre. So I was up there looking at our lab on Monday in Manchester. You know, that's a £65 million beacon of industry. With the opening the week before, we were able to refill the hopper and start talking to some, you know, significant partners about, you know, other projects and other departments and other opportunities for us. So it's just all part of the natural process for us. And as I said, you know, we're building a business here, so the business will be built on the foundations that we're creating now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Neil, as always, if someone's listening and likes the sound of this but are not following the story, then give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, again, today we've been able to demonstrate that we're moving forward not only in the UK but overseas with large international partners, this one being, you know, very, very big. The second thing is that, you know, we have these really good connections. This agreement today came out of our connections with central government, but we also have Innovate UK, and we have a number of other key institutions, including the University of Manchester and University of Cambridge. And the third thing is that I'm the largest single holder, and therefore my aims and aspirations are all aligned with those of long-term holders as well.
Marvellous stuff. Neil, good to chat to you. And, you know, I said, well, listen, have a happy Christmas and a nice new year, and hopefully we'll speak in the new year. But the amount of news you release, I'm not sure if we won't be speaking before the end of the week. But in case we don't, Neil, have a nice Christmas and speak soon.
And thank you for all your help and support, and thanks for the support of our shareholders as well. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gretchen Lambert, Chief Executive Officer of Red Emperor Resources. RMP is the ticker there. Gretchen, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we've not spoken to you before, so we'll get a bit of background on you. Last time I spoke to Greg, of course. Before we do that, Gretchen, for people not familiar with Red Emperor Resources, can you tell us what you're involved with, what you're all about, please?
Yes, we're a oil and gas exploration company. We are listed both on the Australian and the London Stock Exchanges. We are currently in the process of preparing to drill an exciting well in the North Slope of Alaska, where we hold around a 31.5% equity, and that right now is the primary driver for everything, for what we're currently doing.
Marvellous stuff. Well, I mean, like I said, last time I spoke was with Greg, and I haven't spoken with you yet. So what's your background then, Gretchen? Where do you come from, and how do you find yourself here at Red Emperor?
I'm a geophysicist by background, so more on the technical side. I've been in the industry for over 20 years. Last 10 years, I worked for ExxonMobil, the US major, or super major, as they like to call themselves, based in Houston. Last 5 years of that, I was in the commercial role, so I did a lot of looked at a lot of deals, a lot of deal negotiation, deal analysis, and after a while, I realised there were a lot of things that were possibly being missed or overlooked by a company of Exxon's size, and I realised that I have a lot of value to add, maybe to a smaller company where I could bring some of these deals across that have, you know, great potential, great opportunities. So I went exploring, went looking, talking to several people that I knew and people I met along the way, and I ultimately ended up talking to the folks at Red Emperor Resources, and came across in June this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us through some of the news that's come out. I mean, you've got key permits granted. What are these, and what's happening next?
Yes, we're very excited. We have our majority of our primary permits have been granted by the state of Alaska. There's a plan of operations plus permits for ice pad construction and so forth. So basically, in a nutshell, the state of Alaska has given us the go-ahead. They agree with our operations and say you are ready to go. You can start working on your ice road, which we need to build, your ice pad for the rig to come in. Basically, they've given us the thumbs up. So at this stage, we plan to start construction of our ice road in early January, plus the ice pad construction, mobilise the rig in early February. For a spud date sort of mid to late February. We have one more main permit to submit, which will be sort of around the end of this year, which is the permit to drill. And that'll take a few weeks to go through the regulatory system, and that'll be the final hurdle to actually spudding.
Yeah, and just to take us through the potential there for you, for Red Emperor.
Yeah, so the potential for us really can't be understated. We're a small cap company. We have a market cap in the UK of around 11.5 million pounds. We are chasing a gross resource, so recoverable volumes of around 400 million barrels of oil, light, sweet, crude. We have around 31.5% of that. So that's 126 million barrels net to us. I'll let people do their own maths, but converting to dollars, which is what oil is traded in, if you say that's worth around $5 conservatively in the ground, that's half $1 billion to Red Emperor with a market cap of 11 million quid. So people can do their own numbers here, but the upside here, the blue sky upside if this comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it is sort of high risk, I suppose, but it's quite an oily area, isn't it, Alaska, for people not aware?
Yes, I mean, it is, exploration by its nature inherently is risky. This is less risky than the wildcat in, let's say, offshore Africa or somewhere where no one's ever found anything, where there hasn't been any proven hydrocarbons. So it's less risky than the wildcat, still risky because of the exploration play, but it is in Alaska, which has produced 17 billion barrels of oil to date. It's still producing half a billion barrels of oil. And the sands we're targeting, there have been discoveries in these sands in the last few years, which have found almost 3 billion barrels. So there's been a lot of, I would say, de-risking done for us by other companies. So as far as exploration wells come in, and this is based on my 20 years experience, I'd put this at the lower end of the exploration risk matrix.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well... Listen, Gretchen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're talking about here but are not following the story, give them those three quick reasons, if you could, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list.
So 400 million barrel gross target, 126 million barrels of oil to us with market cap of around 11 million quid. We are fully funded to drill the well, and... we will be spudding in February, so there isn't a long time sitting around waiting for us to get on with it. It's happening right now, and by late February, early March, we'll all know what's coming.
Excellent stuff. Christian, good to talk to you. And like I said, a busy sort of first quarter in 2019, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, ASOS. ASC took a hammering, of course. At four, Maestro. MAIS, maybe. At three, Bushveld Minerals, BMN. At two, U Group. Obviously dropped down again. A lot of people chasing these drops, these fallers. They're being investigated by the FCA, I think. And number one is the company I did a video on recently, Brave Bison Group. They're going to be cash flow positive. They have about £5 million in cash. They're about £11 million market cap. And so I think worth looking at. And they work in the area of social media video, which, of course, is massive. All companies want you to do video on social media. It's more engagement. So if you want to see that video, just Google. It's on YouTube. But just Google Justin Waite, Brave Bison, and you'll see that video. By all means, subscribe to my channel, and I'll release further videos. Okay, Top five most liked RNSs come from, at five, Angus Energy, Operations Update. At four, United Oil and Gas, that's UOG, Update. That's by Coulter Well, the Wickwell. At three, Rehoboth Resources, Rig Mobilised for UK Drilling Campaign. At two, Rehoboth Resources, Commencement of VG4 Well, West Brentwood Licence. And number one, you just heard from Neil Rickett on the podcast here. It's collaboration with Chinese Aerospace Company. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.